Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
The Oracle Network.
Due to the mature content of this program, listener discretion is advised.
Thanks for tuning back into The Depth of Darkness, the podcast that dives deep into all things dark and wrong in this world. We're your hosts. As always, I'm Mandy.
And I'm retired Major Hugh Jass, coming at you in your face.
A little delayed squeaky one there. A little nervous there, Hugh, aren't we? Just a little excited.
He's a little shy today, I guess.
Welcome back, everybody. Today we'll be going over an especially horrifying true crime case, because we know you guys love true crime. I mean, who doesn't? As morbid and disturbing as that sounds. Because now listening to myself say that, I'm like, why did I say that? But I like true crime. I mean, it's intriguing. Not for me to go do those acts of, you know, horror, but, you know, it's interesting nonetheless to see the psychology.
Yeah, but you guys go ahead. You do it.
Brains.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. But not only were the crimes that we'll be discussing committed, not only were they horrifying in themselves, but the criminal behind the heinous acts and his reasoning, okay, the reason he claimed to have committed those actions, that's what makes it especially disturbing. So let's get into that, shall we?
You bet.
Without further ado, buckle up. Let's dive all kinds of deep into the story of the Son of Sam, sometimes referred to as the .44 caliber killer, David Berkowitz. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Gotta have that little, like, drum sound from Law & Order. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is.
Dun, dun.
Yeah, dun, dun, dun. The sound effect. All right, so to start off, let's move on over to our handy dandy. Makes us all kinds of randy, but not really. Wikipedia! You know, guys keep going back to that. We keep going back to Wikipedia. But let's go over there to go over David Berkowitz in a little bit more detail. And I'm going to start off by going over his early life. So, you know, his childhood, what might have caused his dementedness, his insane in the membrane.
Yeah.
So according to Wikipedia, David Berkowitz was born Richard David Falco on June 1st of 1953 in Brooklyn, New York. His mother, Elizabeth, quote-unquote Betty, Broder, grew up as part of an impoverished Jewish family and was a waitress. She married Tony Falco, an Italian-American, in 1936. After a marriage of less than 4 years, Tony Falco left her for another woman.
What a guy.
Wow. That's depressing. In 1950, Broder started a relationship with a married man named Joseph Kleinman. Well, there you go. Get back at men for what they do to you by ruining a marriage. That's good. 3 years later, she became pregnant with a child whom she named Richard David Falco. Guess who that is, folks? Yeah, that's the guy we'll be talking about. Within a few days of Richard's birth, Broder gave the child away. Ah, man, I can already see it's getting messed up. Ugh. Although her reasons for doing so are unknown, writers have surmised that Kleinman threatened to abandon her if she kept the baby and used his name. So she basically gave up the kid because she wanted to stay in her relationship.
Ugh.
What a bitch. The infant boy was adopted by Pearl and Nathan Berkowitz of the Bronx. The Jewish-American couple were hardware store retailers of modest means and childless in middle age. So they didn't have any kids and they wanted to have a kid, so they adopted a kid. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, good for them. They reversed the order of the boy's first and middle names and gave him their own surname, raising young David Richard Berkowitz as their only child. Aww.
There you go.
Journalist John Vincent Sanders wrote that Berkowitz's childhood was, quote-unquote, somewhat troubled. Although of above-average intelligence, he lost interest in learning at an early age and became infatuated with petty larceny and starting fires. There you go.
There's a red flag.
Some good old pastimes there, just some arsenic.
I like to see the neighbor's house go up in flames.
Ain't that pretty. Neighbors and relatives
I like the sound of screams in the night.
Yeah, it's whimsical. It helps him sleep at night. Neighbors and relatives would recall Berkowitz as difficult, spoiled, and a bully. Ugh. His adoptive parents consulted at least one psychotherapist due to his misconduct, but his behavior never resulted in a legal intervention or serious mention in his school records. He attended public school number 123 and public school number 77. Wow, this Wikipedia article is pretty legit. Goes into all kinds of detail. Berkowitz's adoptive mother died of breast cancer when he was only 14 years old, and his home life became strained during later years, particularly because he disliked his adoptive father's second wife. Oh, that's sad. So you can see kind of like how his young brain got demented, you know, just from being given away as a baby, even though, you know, he doesn't remember that. He's not going to remember that. She just gave him away, but as he grows older and discovers that, it probably left a, you know, a harsh reality in his head. You know, that's sad.
Life wasn't going too good for him.
No, in general, it sucked. He lived with his father while attending Christopher Columbus High School, graduating in 1971, and then he attended college in a 4.5-room apartment at 170 Dreiser Loop in Co-op City in the Bronx from 1967 to 1971. Man, they're just very specific. In 1971, at the age of 17, Berkowitz joined the United States Army and served in Fort Knox in the United States. And with an
that's a cool gig.
Yeah, and with an infantry division in South Korea. After an honorable discharge in June 1974, he located his birth mother, Betty. After a few visits, she disclosed the details of his birth. The news greatly disturbed Berkowitz. See, I knew it. I knew it was coming. And he was particularly distraught by the array of reluctant father figures. Oh, man, that's so sad. You know, first off, his adoptive mother, died of breast cancer. So that traumatized him. Then he hated his stepmom. Then he meets his actual mom, and she tells him what she did. And then, you know, I mean, that's sad. Like, I can see why, what happened.
Yeah. That's love you. Get the hell out of here.
Forensic anthropologist Elliot Layton described Berkowitz's discovery of his adoption and birth details as the primary crisis of his life, a revelation that shattered his sense of identity. His communication with his birth mother later lapsed, but for a time, he remained in communication with his half-sister, Roslyn. He attended Bronx Community College for 1 year, enrolling in the spring of 1975. In 1976, he went to work as a driver for the Co-op City Taxi Company. He subsequently had several non-professional jobs, and at the time of his arrest, he was working as a letter sorter for the U.S. Postal Service. All right. Well, that's, that's his upbringing and kind of what led up to it. So now we're going to move on over to an article from crimemuseum.org, and Hugh's going to grace us with his whimsical voice for this one. Take it away, huge ass.
Killing spree. According to his own accounts, Berkowitz's killing career began on December 24th, 1975, when he stabbed two women using a hunting knife. Merry Christmas, he said. One of the women was Michelle Forbin, and the other has never been identified. In the early morning hours of July 29, 1976, 18-year-old Donna Loria and 19-year-old Jody Valenti were sitting in Valenti's car when Berkowitz walked up to the car and shot at them. He fired 3 shots and walked away. Loria was killed instantly and Valenti survived. When Valenti was questioned by police, she stated that she did not recognize him and gave a description which fit with a statement by Loria's father, who said that he saw the same man sitting in a yellow car. Testimony by other
taxi
individuals.
Car, perhaps.
Yeah.
Testimony by other individuals in the neighborhood stated that the yellow car had been seen driving around the neighborhood that night. Police determined that the gun used was a .44 caliber Bulldog.
Damn.
On October 23rd, 1976, Berkowitz struck again, this time in Flushing, a community in the borough of Queens. Okay.
What was that sound
I don't know.
Effect?
Hey, there we
there
go.
There you go. All it sounded like at first was like...
Yeah. Yeah, like it was just like sleeping or something. That was weird.
Squeaking
Keenan immediately started the car and drove off. Okay. It was not until they got help that they realized that they had been shot at, even though De Niro had a bullet wound in his head. Both De Niro and Keenan survived the attack and neither saw the shooter. Police determined that the bullets were .44 caliber but could not determine what gun they came from. Investigators did not initially draw a connection between the shooting and the previous one because they occurred in two separate New York boroughs. Shortly after midnight on November 27, 1976, 16-year-old Donna DeMasi and 18-year-old Joanne Lomino were sitting in Lomino's porch in Belrose, Queens. As they talked, a man approached them dressed in military fatigues. He began to ask them for directions in a high-pitched voice before taking out a revolver and shooting at them. They both
fell. You know what I noticed real quick? These two women and the women previously... Two of them are named Donna, and then the other two begin with J names. So there's Jody, and what was the other one? Joanna?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joanne.
Obviously,
that's
he
weird.
Had like
Is that
some...
just like a weird coincidence?
Yeah, a sixth sense to go after these people because of their names or something. I don't know.
I don't know. It's weird.
They both fell, injured, and the shooter ran away. Both girls survived their wounds, but Lomino was paralyzed. Police were able to determine that the bullets were from an unknown .44 caliber gun. They were also able to make composite sketches based on the testimony from the girls and neighborhood witnesses. On January 30, 1977, Christine Freund and John Deal were sitting in Deal's car in Queens when the car was shot at. Deal suffered minor injuries and Freund died of injuries at the hospital. Neither victim ever saw the shooter. After this shooting, police publicly connected this case with the previous shootings. They observed that all shootings involved a .44 caliber gun, and the shooter seemed to target young women with long, dark hair. When the composite sketches from the various attacks were released, New York Police Department officials noted that they were likely searching for multiple shooters. On March 8, 1977, Columbia University student Virginia Vaskarishian was shot walking home from class. She lived just one block away from fellow victim Christine Freund. She was shot several times and eventually died of a gunshot wound to the head. In the minutes following the shooting, a neighbor who had heard the shooting went outside and saw what he described as a short, husky teenage boy sprinting from the crime scene. Other neighbors reported seeing the teenager as well, as a man matching Berkowitz's description in the area of the shooting. The earliest media coverage implied that the teenager was the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. Eventually, police officials determined that the teenager was a witness and not a suspect.
Yeah.
On April 17, 1977, Alexander Esau and Valentina Suriani were in the Bronx, several blocks away from the scene of the Valenti Loria shooting. The pair were each shot twice while sitting in a car, and both died before they could talk to police. Investigators determined that they were killed by the same suspect in the other shootings, with the same .44 caliber firearm. At the crime scene, police discovered a handwritten letter addressed to the captain of the NYPD. In this letter, Berkowitz referred to himself as the Son of Sam, and expressed his desire to continue his shooting sprees.
Yeah. He likes writing in all caps, too. I say goodbye and goodnight. Please let me haunt you with these words. I'll be back, to be interpreted as bang, 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 what?
Yours in murder,
Mr. Monster.
Mr. Monster.
Yeah. Where does he say he's the Son of Sam, damn it?
I don't see that.
No. Interpreted as bang, 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 ugh. Why did he have to? It's like the sound effect you make when you do the gun shooting. You know?
Yeah.
Ooh,
ah, ooh, ah, ow, ooh, ah.
Obviously, it's not funny if somebody's actually getting shot, but when you do those sound
effects... No, it's not feeling too good.
It makes me laugh when you do those sound effects.
Ouch, and I'd like to see some guy try and shoot a handgun that fast, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, so now that we've covered his backstory, as well as the killings themselves, we have one last article we wanted to touch on, which covers some theories surrounding the Son of Sam persona, and why some people believe that there are actually more than just one man committing the crimes, referred to as the Sons of Sam, rather than the Son of Sam. Yeah, so the last article we'll be discussing is actually taken from Meow, meow.com, and it's titled, Why Was David Berkowitz Case Reopened? Shocking theories claim Son of Sam killer didn't act alone. And it was written by Ayush Sharma on May 4th, 2021. So it's mad current, y'all. It's mad current.
You bet.
Let me open up that article. Okay, so let me scroll on down here. I'm just going to read it all the way from the beginning here.
Okay.
Netflix has a knack for creating engaging content for its viewers, and it certainly produces a lot of projects based on real-life subjects. From Night Stalker, The Hunt for a Serial Killer, to Evil Genius, the streaming service is home to a variety of spine-chilling documentaries about serial killers. The latest docuseries to join the catalog is The Sons of Sam. This series revolves around David Richard Berkowitz, one of the notorious serial killers who pleaded guilty to 8 separate shooting attacks that began in New York City during the summer of 1976. Berkowitz was taken into custody on August 10, 1977, and was charged with murdering 8 people. Berkowitz was later sentenced on June 12, 1978, to 25 years to life in prison. Whoa, hold on, my screen's flipping out here. And it keeps showing me this picture. We'll leave the links down below, everybody, if you guys want to take a look at this. Every single... Why is this on my feed for all of these articles? It's like that creppy or creepy skin that old people get. It's like, don't apply moisturizer to creppy skin. Here's why. Some weird-ass advertisement. Yeah.
Someone's telling you something.
It's been on every single one of these articles. Why am I getting that? I don't
put
have
put some of this on your
skin.
Wrinkly ass.
Damn.
Yeah.
I'm just a little bit over 30, all right? Ugh. I don't like looking at that. It's nasty. Nasty ass and ads. All right. Where was I?
I have no idea.
I don't remember where I was. Oh, okay. Berkowitz was later sentenced on June 12, 1978, to 25 years to life in prison for each murder to be served consecutively. So he wasn't, he's never getting out.
No, he'd really have to, you know, be in some kind of shape to make it that far.
Mm-hmm. However, a lot of people were not convinced that all these killings were committed by a single person, and the case was reopened according to various news reports in the early 80s. So, why was the case reopened even after Berkowitz's confession? Let's dig a little deeper, you know how we do, and know how, and know more about the reopening of the case. Let's go all kinds of balls deep into this case, y'all. Let me keep scrolling past this creepy skin. Ugh. Ugh. I wonder if other people open up these articles and they're not going to have those same ads. They're going to be like, what is she talking about?
No.
It's just, it's gross. All right. The reopening of the case. There were a lot of reasons why the Son of Sam case was reopened. Numerous confessions made by Berkowitz during the trials made everyone believe that he might have taken some help from others to commit those heinous crimes. In 1979, the serial killer mailed a book about witchcraft in North Dakota. Many reports claim that he had underlined several passages and written a few notes that shocked everyone. A note in the book read, Arliss, parentheses sick, Perry, hunted, stalked, and slain, followed to California. The line served as a potential clue in the case of Arliss Perry, a 19-year-old North Dakota newlywed who had been murdered at Stanford on October 2, 1974. Scrolling down. After being sentenced, Berkowitz claimed that he joined a quote-unquote satanic cult in 1975. The reports claim that he left a note near the bodies of Alexander Esau and Valentina Suriani, which was addressed to Joseph Borelli, captain of the New York Police Department. In the note, Berkowitz called himself Son of Sam for the first time. And I think that's the note you mentioned in the other article.
Yeah.
The one where it's like, bang, bang. Ugh!
Yeah, not Mr. Monster. It was Son of Sam, that one.
Son of Sam. Yeah, even though if you guys look at the article, it's the Crime Museum one. It has a picture of the, it's just a, I'm assuming it's just a portion of the, not the article, the note that he left. He writes in all caps. It's very sloppy, like chicken scratch. And he calls himself Mr. Monster, but it doesn't show anywhere on there that it's Son of Sam. But apparently the actual full letter did include that name. So that's why they call him that. He called himself that. Self-proclaimed. Berkowitz mentioned the Perry attack in other letters, suggesting that he knew details of it from the perpetrator himself. However, police believe that the information was not of any use, and the case has since been solved.
Other people involved in the killings. In 1996, Yonkers police reopened Berkowitz's case to investigate some of his claims. The law enforcement authority believed that he was not alone in committing those gruesome murders.
He also made
statements that he had been part of a violent cult that helped him carry out the murders, and that fellow members John and Michael Carr assisted him. And then they have like a headline, I don't know if that's the Post or the Times, where Berkowitz warns of more sons. And then back down to the article, it says, at first, Berkowitz said that he was a part of all the killings. However, he retracted his initial statement and said that he did not pull the trigger in the shooting of Stacy Moskowitz and Robert Violante. Journalist Maury Terry, who covered the Sons of Sam murder case for more than 25 years, is one of the prominent names who believed that Berkowitz was not alone. Citing a statement from one of the witnesses, NBC noted the killer was not Berkowitz. Mm. The detailed description did not indicate toward a dark, curly-haired Berkowitz. Witnesses also described different automobiles at the scene, including a description of a getaway driver in a yellow Volkswagen. The report also discussed the interview between Terry and Berkowitz. In the interview, Berkowitz claimed he was the gunman at only two of the eight shootings attributed to the Son of Sam, and that he killed three of the six victims. His claims were reportedly deemed true by various sketches that were made after the descriptions provided by the witnesses. NBC also reported that the witness sketch from the first shooting in the Bronx had a clear resemblance to Berkowitz. Meanwhile, the sketches from other shootings looked like someone else pulled the trigger. The confusion regarding the case still haunts a lot of people, but as of now, the case is closed. The new Netflix documentary will talk about the events that took place during the case and its aftermath. Sons of Sam will be premiering exclusively on Netflix on Wednesday, May 5th. Okay.
Yeah, it's already out there. I almost started watching it, but I haven't watched it yet. It's on my list. I'm currently watching like a fantasy show. I'm not going to say which one because you're all going to think I'm a geek.
Geekola.
It has the name Jupiter in the title, all right?
Oh, that's beautiful.
It looks really good. Okay. So I'm starting to watch that. And then I'll mosey on over to Son of Sam. But I honestly, like, to give my two cents, I honestly think there's more than one. I think he took the fall for it. I think, yeah, he was involved, obviously. Proof that he was there. He was one of the killers. I think it's the Sons of Sam. Yeah.
I'm just looking at him, and from my biased point of view, there's something wrong with him. I can see it in his expression.
Yeah. Kind of looks like a doofus, in my opinion. Just that look. At least in those younger years.
Something unpleasant. Something unpleasant going on there.
Something lurks inside those bodies.
Yeah, something strange emanates.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's the disturbing case of the notorious Son of Sam that we're hearing about on Netflix. Long story short. Let us know what you guys think.
Bad childhood and
this is a recurring
story with these guys, so it's not completely their fault.
it's really not. There's always a horrific, traumatic either upbringing or a situation that these people were placed in that caused them to basically turn into the monsters that they became, you know, and that's so sad. It's so sad, you know, and back in the day, you know, that's why mental health has such a bad stigma behind it is a lot of those, they called them insane asylums. That's what they called them. You know, the insane wards, they would torture those poor people, you know, or they would assume that they were possessed by a devil and they would do these horrific things to these people, not helping them whatsoever, helping them. So they didn't take people's mental health seriously. And if they did, like they are nowadays, if they took it more serious like they are now back then, maybe just hypothetically, maybe some of these crimes wouldn't have happened. You know, if people knew what to look for, and to try and correct those behaviors earlier on. You know, a kid playing with fire, getting his rocks off on, you know, arson, that could be a precursor to something more violent, which in his case it was. In Berkowitz's case, turned into a murderer. So it's devastating. I do have, what's the word? I do feel bad to some extent for each of the people we've talked about, because each one of them have had some sort of trauma from their childhood, and it's sad. But I don't condone, I don't like, I don't, you know, whatever. I don't think anything that they did was good. All of their actions, that's all on them. But if they had been helped sooner on, maybe, you know, things could have been different. But that's just my 2 cents. I got to give you my 2 cents, you know?
And I'll give you 2 cents. I think... But I remember this time period. That was right around the time I was graduating high school. And
so you knew it like when it was happening.
Yeah. It freaked a lot of people out. Mm-hmm. It did. That he'd just walk up and casually blow people away. And since then, other crimes have happened, even in Chicago. Disturbing things, more disturbing than this. No. Like the old Cabrini Green murders and some guy with a high-powered rifle.
Yeah,
high-powered rifle picking off children as they're walking to school. Or some other gangbanger guy ran up and shot a little baby in the face when, you know, the baby was...
Didn't that happen recently, like a few buggy? Years ago? Didn't that happen
a few years ago? Yeah. Yeah, right in front of his dad, I guess. Just ran up. Awful. Put the gun in a kid's face, blammo. So, I mean, there's been other things since then that are worse, but at the time, you know, America was more innocent then, and it was pretty, yeah, people were freaking out over it.
Oh, yeah, I bet. It, you know,
dominated the news.
On the rise, you know, all that, people just, I mean, yeah, I can imagine this was terrifying back then. You know, women would start, you know, putting their hair up in ponytails or trying to put it in a way where, you know, it would disguise that they have long brown hair. You know, they would go to extreme, what's the word? They would go to an extreme extent. Is that what I'm thinking? Does that even sound right? I don't know. My brain's not functioning right today, folks. They would go through drastic measures is what I'm getting at to try and not be a next target. People were terrified of the Son of Sam. And even today, things like this can still happen. Stuff like this still does happen, even though we might not hear it as much as we should. You know,
it's just not as special anymore because there's so many more psychos today.
Yeah, they all blend in, too. They know, they're more malicious. They're more manipulative. They can blend in. I mean, they're humans. Of course they blend in. What am I talking about? But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's terrifying in itself. So, you know, yeah. Ugh. What a disturbing case. I definitely need to jump onto Netflix and start watching this series, though. And any of you listeners, if you've already seen it, let us know what you thought of it. Should we watch it? Is it good? I'm sure it is. We're going to go into it.
The guy's interesting. I know that. And he's I'll give him credit for something. He's much better looking today than he was then.
I do agree.
He does.
He was butt-ass ugly when he was young.
Yeah, I mean, he grew into a normal-looking guy. Whereas when he was young
dorky
he looked like there was something seriously
like dorky,
going on.
Just like a mouth breather, that kind of look, you know? He stumbles over his own feet.
I don't know. I just see, I see like an evil look there. That's what I see.
I don't know. I didn't see that. Like, if I passed him in the street, I wouldn't even take a second glance. That's just me, though. I don't see that in him. But then again, you know, if I just looked at his picture and didn't know who he was, I wouldn't get that vibe. That's what's creepy. Same with, what's his name? Who's that guy?
Ed Gein.
Gein, yeah. Same with Gein. I don't know, I have a brain fart. Yeah. Same with him. Like, if I just looked at him.
That shocked me. I thought he'd be weirder looking.
Yeah.
I was waiting for some real weird looking guy, and you see Ed Gein, and he looks like some guy who works at the hardware store.
Yeah,
you
know? Or a construction worker, or somebody who is like a labor worker, but just a normal person. He didn't look strange at all, and I actually feel the same way about David Berkowitz. He's geeky. I mean, he was geeky when he was a kid, but yeah, he's definitely more normal looking now. He grew into his features. Yeah. But on that note, before we talk your ears off, everybody, now that we've dived all kinds of deep into the story and why it causes so much discussion amongst many, let's dive even deeper into those closing statements. Whee! I was waiting for your scream.
Whee!
If you love our show and want to help support the dark cause, then please consider leaving us a rating and review on Apple iTunes or, you know, wherever else you can leave reviews. Your reviews are what helps our show get noticed more easily, and it also helps other listeners find our show a bit more quickly. And also, by leaving a 5-star review, you'll also get one of our stickers. You know, we mention it ad nauseum. But if you send us a screenshot of your 5-star review and rating, whether it's on iTunes, Podchaser, I think you can leave a review. I don't know if you can leave a review on Spotify, but there's tons of other podcast platforms where you can leave a review. It doesn't strictly have to be iTunes,
right,
even though that's the most common. Send us a screenshot. You can email it to us at depthofdarknesspod@gmail.com. Or if you're following us on Instagram, if you're not already, go follow us. Go follow us. It's @DOD_POD. All of it's down below. You can also send us the screenshot as a DM there. And let us know where to send your sticker, and bam, you got yourself a sticker. Special. And upon special request, you can get scented, a little fragranced.
Yeah.
Courtesy of you,
Stinky stickers.
Yeah, stinky stickers. Collect them all.
Yeah.
And that's all for this week's episode, folks. Thanks again for tuning in to The Depth of Darkness. And until next time, bye.
Bye-bye. Son of a...
Hi there. My name's Elise, and I am a lawyer in the Pacific Northwest. I host this podcast, True Crime Cat Lawyer, with my co-host, Winston, my cat. She is a mustache, bow-tied, fierce little ball of sass, and we both come to you every other Thursday telling some stories from our hometown of the Pacific Northwest. We try to cover cases from Oregon, Washington, Alaska. We're hoping to cover some from Canada soon, and we just like telling crime stories that are lesser known in the true crime community, but we do also cover some of the big ones. And if you are interested in learning more about our podcast, True Crime Cat Lawyer, you can head over to our website, truecrimecatlawyer.com, or you can send us a quick email at truecrimecatlawyer@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter, and we are available on pretty much every podcast platform that you will listen to. We hope you enjoy what you hear, and we hope you'll tune in. Thanks.
The been thinking about McDonald's all day, can't get it off my mind. I can already taste it. Ooh, got my mind on my mouth and my mouth ready for some Mickey D's deal.
There's a deal for every moment at McDonald's.
Right now, get two of your favorites for just $3.50. Mix and match a classic McChicken, a hot and spicy McChicken, or a juicy McDouble. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Enjoy! Thanks.
The order breakfast at the McDonald's drive-thru. Tell yourself you'll wait to eat it at work, but it smells way too good. So you eat it right there in the McDonald's parking lot, Neil. There's a meal for every morning at McDonald's.
Right now, get any size iced coffee for 99 cents until 11 a.m. and pair it with your favorite breakfast sandwich or one of our tasty bakery treats. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's. I'm loving it.